This meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza. Councilmember Christensen.
Here.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar.
Here.
Councilmember McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. And we have Reverend Karen Hernandez here for the invocation. If you will all rise, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Let us pray. Loving God, as we approach this Pentecost Sunday and remember how you fulfill your promises, how you send your Spirit to be among us so that we will never be alone, we give you thanks. We remember how the Spirit came with wind and flame and pray that your Spirit would indeed blow through us, invigorating us with each thunderstorm that passes, with each breeze that cools as weather warms. We give thanks, God, for new residents, new families, new businesses, new opportunities in this community. We pray that you would be within us, reminding us that we're all desiring the same thing, to be a beloved community where all are welcome, where all can thrive, where we can enjoy your creation and your children by being in relationship with one another. We pray for leaders of all kinds, for teachers in all sorts of settings, and for all who serve you. We pray that you would guide us to make wise decisions that would help us to build your kingdom right here in CUNA. It's in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Now, join me for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Thank you, Reverend. I would like to ask council to amend the agenda on a couple different items. One is a request from Troy for an additional council meeting. That would be item 8E. And then the other thing would be to amend the agenda to discuss economic development position as well as possible appointment for that position after the executive session.
So moved. Can I just say that? So moved. Hearing no objection, I say yes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Yes. Motion's made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. So the first item then is the consent agenda. Any questions or comments or motion?
If nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Our first item then, or next item here, is community reports of requests. Tonight we have our Ada County Assessor from with Robert McQuaid. I kept introducing him as our Ada County Treasurer for some reason earlier, but I guess he knows what he does there, so that's what's important.
Well, sometimes I think it would be easier to be the treasurer, especially when we send out assessment notices. I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to set my timer here so I won't go over 10 minutes. I tend to get really interested in this stuff next thing I know 15, 20 minutes has gone by and and everyone has left the room. So I'm just going to just get started right here. I've got 195,000 assessment notices we're sending out. It'll be a week from this weekend, and 8,000 of those are going to CUNA residents. The total market value, this is not the taxable value, but the total market value here in CUNA is $1.4 billion. That's up over 40% or 20% over last year's $1.2 billion. And as I go through these numbers are some of the highest numbers in the county as far as percent changes. And I don't want to start a fight or anything, but after hearing this, I think you could go out and claim that maybe you're one of the top fastest growing communities in the state of Idaho. So we've got $1.4 billion. We take out $460 million for the homeowner's exemption. Other outstanding exemptions, $170,000, and then add in operating property, $16 million. And the number I think you'd be most interested in is what we call the potential taxable value. That's $964 million. That's a 25% increase over last year. I just want to talk about residential property a little bit because things really seem to be going on over here in CUNA. I think it's worth noting it. The parcel count is 7,451. That's a 6% increase over last year. Countywide, we're looking at about a 2% increase. So a 6% increase in new residential parcels is really a very strong growth. Your market value, not taxable value, on single-family residential is $1.3 billion. That's up 21% over last year. The median increase on existing here in CUNA is 12%. So your 1,500, 2,000 square foot home, we would expect to see about 12% median increase. Last year there was an 8% increase, and that percentage increase is about the same as what we're seeing across the county. Median value on a single-family residential home in Ada County is $250,000. You just cannot find anything for $200,000. If you did, it's going to need a lot of repair. It'd just really be distressed. It might just be an outbuilding or something like that. You're just not going to find a single-family residential for $200,000, and that's one thing that's really contributing to those rapid escalating prices. The big driver, of course, for residential property values is the value increase in land. Land has gone up 15%. I remember when my wife and I bought our first house in 1982, we had a tenth of an acre, and we spent $10,000 for it. Today we have a 3/10 of an acre is the average size lot in Ada County, and the value is $125,000. That's just for the lot before you put anything on it. Another factor that's really driving price appreciation in the county is in-migration. We're seeing that 50% of the immigrants, people who have migrated into Ada County, 50% of them come from California, Washington, and Oregon, and they're paying cash for homes. And that's where we get into these bidding wars. Someone will list a house for $300,000. It goes on the market at 9 o'clock in the morning. Before noon gets here, there could be two or three different offers with several thousand dollars more, and these are all cash offers. And to me, this is really important because the last time we saw values increasing like this, it was leading up to the recession. And one might think that, are we headed in that direction? I don't think we are, because back then in 2004, 2005, and 6, people were putting very little money down, and they were not buying these properties to live in. They were buying them to flip. But in today's market, people are paying cash for homes that they expect to live in. So I think it's a very strong market. Something I think is of concern, though, we see 12% increase in single-family residential. Wages in Ada County have only increased by 5% over the last 10 years. That's not 5% a year. That's 5% over the last 10 years. There was a 3% increase from 15 to 16. That's the latest information. So wages just aren't keeping up. And I really see, in fact, this could really play into to your advantage or disadvantage, and that is people are going to be moving out because they can't afford those higher price homes. They're going to be coming to Meridian, to CUNA, and to Star in those outlying areas. So I think eventually it's going to start adding more pressure to what's going on out here. Commercial property is, you have 251 parcels, valued at $88 million. Personal property is $6.4 million. So the net value, this is not taxed by net market value, is $94.5 million. The last thing I just want to really dwell on is the new construction rule, because we get to increase our budgets by 3% plus the value of new construction. So this is really important to you. If you can increase your budget capacity. Your new construction, this is the taxable value, is $80.5 million. That's an increase of 70%. Countywide, we're looking at a 5% increase. Residents, you've added 351 new residential units. That's a 26% increase. and your commercial taxable value is $7.8 million. Fortunately, you don't have any urban renewal over here, and I hope you don't have urban renewal. It is so difficult to track, and it's so complicated. I can't help but feel that throughout the state that there are some problems in the valuations of the urban renewal parcels. I don't know if it's significant as far as dollar amount, but I think as far as number of errors, I think we would be surprised at the number of errors. It's just, it is so complicated. I just wanted to end here with the tax burden. That's who is paying the taxes, the residential property owners or the commercial property owners. Residential property owners are picking up 87% of the tab out here, and commercial is picking up 13%. Last year, it was 86% residential and 14% commercial. So this residential is picking up a little bit more, and I think it's for a couple of reasons. There's a real strong residential market for new construction. As we know, it's been very expensive. Plus, the price appreciation at 12% is really pushing that up. But there's another little piece, and that's the homeowner's exemption was fixed at $100,000 2 years ago. So homeowners aren't able to take advantage of that. So when they see a 12% increase, it's not being offset by some kind of an increase in the homeowner's exemption. Ada County is 68% residential, and Boise City is 59% residential. I'm just going to bring this to a close with the comment that 2017 was a very strong year. Ada County is growing. Kuna is even growing faster than Ada County is. We're looking at above normal price appreciation. Normal is about 5% or 4% appreciation, 5%. So we're looking at 12%. That's about three times the amount of depreciation we would normally see. Ada County's population is 457,000. That was an increase of 13,000, or 3%. And a 3% change doesn't sound like a lot, but that means it's going to be doubling every 20 years. So, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Any questions for Bob?
I've got one that I bet you'd want to know the answer to. When's this going to end? Anyway, I'm going to...
What do you got with that?
I was having a chat with some people who are really in tune with this. We think our horizon is 3 years, and we don't see any change really in the next 2 to 3 years. We think the growth is going to continue. And there's strong price appreciation. As long as there is a real disparity between the value of homes in California and in Boise, we're going to be attracting those people. And they're going to sell their 1,500 square foot home for $1 million, and they'll put $300,000-$400,000 on a new home, and they still have walking around cash. And so they're just going to be able to outbid those of us who've lived here for the better part of our lives.
So we had a nice discussion for a while earlier, and one of the things that you had mentioned, which might be good to mention here, would be as those assessments go out, you were going to also put a note in there about that, explaining how that works so people don't get too excited about the percentage increase on their home values and their taxes. And
Mayor, thanks for bringing that up. With this high increase, we thought it's time to get something out there. I think it's real well written, and it'll be easy to understand that a 12% increase in market value is not going to translate into a 12% increase in taxes. It might be a 5% increase or something like that, and hopefully that will allay some of the people's fears.
Yeah.
Cut down the number of people who are going to be filing appeals this year,
right, too. Thank you so much for coming out. I always find it interesting when you present to us, so thank you very much.
Thank you. That's my 10 minutes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Mayor, it was so nice to see you. Nice visiting with you earlier. Nice to see members of the council again, too. We'll be back next year.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 8A, business discussion and direction on animal licensing. Chris Ingalls, City Clerk.
Mayor, Council, Chris Ingalls for the record. I had previously come forward, talked about adjusting the fees on animal licensing for the June 1st, we go to a half price. And based after that meeting, I went back and did some more research on maybe changing how we do animal licensing to a rolling renewal, which means each month. So when I checked into that, Kuna's the only one that continues to just do the solid annual, the December. Mm-hmm. There are two cities that will do a 1- and 3-year renewal. The Humane Society and Casal both can adjust to that. I think there was one other city that's doing it currently. So what I would request is if we're going to go to a renewal that's rolling, that we not make a change to the ordinance at this time for the July and just let it run as it is this year, because we would just have to recodify again to implement a rolling renewal to be effective in January. So my thought would be to just wait when do it all at one time and then just do the half price this year. And then starting in the end of this year, end of 2018, everybody would renew as they normally do, and then people who come in with news throughout the year, then we would start staggering. And instead of a new license being issued every year, the same license number would be continual. So instead of a new tag, they just would use the same number until they lost it or it needed to be replaced. Along with that, I just kind of wanted to mention a couple things. We do get calls asking if they can register their cats. I don't know if that's something council is interested in, letting those members that want to register their cats to do so. And the other thing that has become a little bit of a conversation is we pay $65,000 to the Humane Society. Obviously, license doesn't cover that cost. There have been sort of having some conversations that licensing money may be direct towards altering, you know, spay and neuter, working with Humane Society or SNP or local vets, you know, trying to get some of the cats, the stray cats, get them altered, maybe dedicating the funds that are received on licensing, you know, to do that. So just some thoughts on that. And as an update, we've had 341 calls from the Humane Society, and we averaged about 200 licenses from the Humane Society where they issued them on our behalf, and then the rest of them all came through us, and we average about 500 a year. And with that, I stand for any questions or conversation.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Something's brewing at the end of the
Other than barking at the tree, we were supposed to get reports from the Humane Society. I haven't got any. I don't know if anybody else has.
We get those monthly.
Every month we were told that October last year we would get a report. And it started, and then it just stopped again.
My reports? Yes.
Oh.
No, they come in. I have not got my reports out. I have been behind on the reports.
Tell the Humane Society, I'm sorry.
I will apologize. That is on me. I am trying to get caught up, and we will make a priority of getting those reports scanned and out to you guys to take a look at.
Thank you.
Okay. Question, comments?
I think looking into the SNP stuff is a great idea, and I would like to hear more about that.
Okay.
Good. I guess I do. I'm a little bit curious. So are you suggesting everybody would still needs to renew in January 2019 as usual? So like even if somebody just got a license on December 1st, they would still have to get a new one on January 1st? Or we're saying...
I think we would want to use some discretion there.
Well, I guess I'm just curious, like, how, I mean, I would assume we would need, that would have to be addressed in the ordinance itself, that it would have, like, an effective date of, like, how that's going to roll out. So I just.
Right. Our thought has been, starting, so everybody who renews for January 1st of 2019 they would expire December 31st of 2019. But if you came in and did a new in, say, February, then 12 months from there, February. If you came in 2018, say, December 1st, I think at that point maybe we would want to look at if we would go ahead and work in the gray area on that, whether we would maybe give them 12 months plus a month to try and get them on a monthly cycle if we weren't ready to implement. When we made the changeover with the business licenses, we did give them some extra time, and we did do some adjustments to match up the alcohol licensing with the business licensing. So I'm certainly open to suggestions on that.
I mean, I guess if we have information that licenses were issued on certain days throughout 2018, I'd be curious. It seems like it would be easy to just say that's their renewal date now. Once the ordinance goes into effect, whatever date you got your license last year, that's your renewal date regardless.
And we could do that. I would think, though, that we wouldn't want to do less than. So if they came in August of 18, we knew their expiration would be August of each year. I don't think we would, would we just have them wait to renew till August of the following year? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, because otherwise, I can't recall, we do or don't do at this point the half price fee?
We do.
Okay. I mean, for those, I guess it makes sense, maybe. I still struggle a little bit with the idea that somebody who gets a license on July 1st pays the same as somebody who gets one on December 29th. Right. And then they both would need to still come in on, I mean, technically, according to the ordinance, would need to come in on January 1st, which we're not even open. So they'd have to come in on December 31st, technically, I guess.
Right.
But I don't even know that we issue a license for the next year. See, it gets very complicated, because if you got a dog on December 31st, in theory, you'd have to get a 2018 license, right?
Right.
And so then the next day the license would already be expired but were closed, so they couldn't get a new one. So then they'd already have an expired license. But anyway, it just seems,
I see what you're saying,
like it doesn't make sense for if somebody got a dog at some point during the year and paid for the license, why we would still require them to come in on January 1st if we want to make this change, because then it seems like we're not actually making the change until 2020. For people with existing licenses.
Right. No, I see that. I think we could implement the change earlier. We could implement it this year. It would be partway through the year, but we would end up with more of a staggered type situation, and we would get new tags in. So at a certain date starting, they would get new tags, which would be the rolling renewal tags.
At the risk of making this overly complicated, would it make the most sense to change the ordinance so that there's like a short period of time where from the time, like let's say June 1st, I don't think we can go that fast, but through like September 1st, where the fee is a quarter of what it normally is because it's only good for like that short period of time. And then starting September or whenever, we just start doing the annual licenses or...
It goes to half price on July 1st, and we won't see very many dog licenses between now and then because people know that it's coming.
I guess the thing I think this is getting overthunk, but if we don't make the change until January 1st, we will technically have anybody who gets a dog or gets a license from July 1st through December 31st will have paid half price for a year-long license, depending on when the ordinance changes. So that's what I'm trying to avoid, because I also don't want to put them in a situation where they've now paid a half annual fee for a license that, depending on when exactly you get it, might only be good for a week or two.
Right. Well, so my preference would be, just based on trying to keep everything as it should, would be to keep the July 1st half price at this point. And then gear up for the January 1 of 2019, that's when we switch tags for everybody. They go to a permanent tag. They go to a permanent number. And use 2019 to make the transition of the staggering. instead of trying to do it partway through 2018. Because currently we're issuing out 2018 tags, and they're coded with 18 and then a consecutive number. And so the new tags will be numbered completely different. And I think my preference would be to have one numbering sequence going instead of trying to run two. So that would, in essence, make the change occur, as you said, through 2019 and then noticeable in 2020.
Because the alternative would maybe be if we changed it so the fees do not switch to half price on July 1st, and so everybody in 2018 is paying for a full year, and then once we get the new tags in, we say, come in, we'll swap you out, here's a new tag, and whatever day you got that old tag that you're surrendering now, that's going to be your renewal date moving forward.
Yes, we could do that.
That seems like the easiest way. That way everybody is paying a full year fee
right
this year, and we won't have some people that only, yeah.
So let me do this before we commit to that. Let me check and make sure that we can pull usable data from Casell to make sure that we can notify new people, the people,
okay,
so that we can make that staggered.
Okay.
I just want to verify that. I don't want to say we can do something that turns into a processing nightmare.
Not a problem.
Okay. But it sounds like maybe we could do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for making that complicated.
No, it's one of those things that seems simple, but if we don't do it in the right sequence, then all year long, in order to collect this fee, we're notifying people and trying to track that, and it just gets really complicated that way. And I'd rather not use all of our staff time trying to figure that. So I appreciate your comments, sir. I think that's helpful.
And I think if people feel like they're getting a fair shake, or like they don't have to game it, like you're talking about, oh, we're not going to see very many licenses between now and July 1st because they're waiting till, I mean, if everybody gets the same deal, and doesn't matter what day, I mean, like the December 27th thing we talked about, you know, then I think maybe more people would be likely to license. Thank you.
All right. Anything else on that one? All right. Item B, financial results through April 30th, 2018. John Marsh, City Treasurer.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you guys this evening?
Riveted.
Wonderful.
I bet you are. Financial results are so appealing. So sticking with the same format that I have in previous months, just going to focus on the four major funds, the general fund, the water fund, sewer fund, and irrigation fund, and give you the results of operations and your cash balance. And if there are any questions as I roll through it, please stop me, or we can have a Q&A afterwards as well. So if that's okay with you, I'll go ahead and proceed and start with the general fund.
Okay.
The general fund, and to set the stage, I'm going to give you the operating revenue net of operating expenditures for each fund. So for the general fund through April 30th, it was $387,380, and that is revenue greater than expenditures. Revenues greater than expenditures, so that, of course, is a very good thing. Cash balance is solid at just over $2 million. Any questions on the general fund? All righty. Water fund, the operating revenues exceeded operating expenditures by $888,784. That is also good. However, that's reflective of the fact that many of the capital projects in the water fund have yet to fully begin. So that's reflective of where we're at. Cash balance is sitting at $5.4 million. And so, again, the water fund is healthy and progressing nicely. Any questions? The sewer fund is the revenues over expenditures thus far are $827,220, and in the same fashion as the water fund, many of the capital projects are just beginning to take off. So many of those expenditures are not in yet. The total cash balance is just slightly over $4.5 million. So at present, the sewer fund is doing well. Any questions? And the last major fund is the irrigation fund, and the revenues over expenditures were $446,246. So again, very positive. In the same situation as the two prior funds, it, many of the capital projects are just getting underway. So cash balance just slightly under $2 million at $1.997 million. And overall, the government-wide cash balance is $16.1 million at the end of April. So again, that balance is exceptional and is a is again another high mark for CUNA, the highest value I've seen yet. So that again is very good. It's a very positive situation currently. Any questions?
Question for John. Yes.
Can I ask a short timer question?
Yes, sir.
John, all of these under the annual budget, you show a negative under operating revenue net of operating expenditures.
Sure.
And it's a total of 34%. I'm going to use irrigation.
Okay.
We're at the 34%. If the year to date is above projected, why would the annual budget be a negative?
Great question, Councilman Cardozo. What that represents is, well, I'll back up. We're required by statute to balance, to pass a balanced budget. So revenues equal expenditures. We do that. What this represents is that we've budgeted more expenditures than revenues, meaning we're pulling money out of our contingency fund, so our carryover. So we're budgeting operating revenue and operating expenditures, but we're using some of our carryover funds to balance that budget. So in the case of the irrigation fund, we used a projected $101,783 out of our reserve balances to balance that budget. So we're projecting our revenues are X, our expenditures are Y, our revenues X are not enough to meet those expenditures, so we're pulling some of our reserves in to balance that budget.
So at the end of the year, if the year-to-date is actually a plus, our annual budget should be a plus at the end of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So generally, the way we're progressing right now, if you were to trend that out, which is what we do here, and everything pans out the way it's going right now, the city will exceed budget. Absolutely, yes. It's trending that way, actually very materially. Yeah.
So every budget from we are negative, so we are using contingency to maintain every fund at this time?
At the time we budgeted. Now what's happening now because of trend, our revenues are far exceeding our operating expenditures, so at the end of the year, city will be in a better position than we budgeted. So likely, at the beginning of the year, we projected we'll use a little bit of our reserves. In this case, irrigation was $101,000. The way we're trending, those numbers will, the excess of revenues over expenditures will far exceed what we used in the budget of $101,000. So you're likely to have an additional $300,000 to $400,000 in the irrigation fund based upon excess revenues at the end of this year if we trend appropriately.
Never be carried forward
exactly
into the next fiscal year under contingency.
Exactly. Yeah. And most of that is fueled by, or if a majority of it is fueled by growth. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And I think when we get into this next one, we'll see why those carryovers and contingencies are so important. And John, thank you so much. You do a wonderful job here. We can't tell you how much we appreciate what you've done for the city over the years.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Make sure you get a cell phone.
Item C, Orchard Lift Station. Bob Bachman, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'm sure you saw all the memos we sent out to you. It'd probably be easiest just to answer any questions you might have. And Paul's also here if you guys have any questions for the engineer.
Probably just for the record, if you would just kind of give a quick synopsis of.
Sure. The first memo is basically discussing, the 8C is discussing the reason behind needing the Orchard Lift Station. This is a project that Gordon had started 2015, 2016, the conversations of doing it. Basically, but the New Orchard Lift Station has two purposes. One is to service stuff east, and also to take capacity off of the 10-mile lift station, which is west of town. Currently, the 10-mile lift station is running at capacity or over capacity if you count what we've the developments that are coming in. So by putting Orchard on, by building Orchard and putting it online, it will alleviate the over capacity issues at 10-mile. With that said, though, it's kind of more of a 3 or 4 phase approach to fix the problem totally. I went through it a little bit in the memo. This is kind of step one to get the problem resolved, but we're going to have to keep on top of it for over the next few years to make sure we resolve it completely. But this is definitely a priority and a must to move forward on for growth on the south side of the tracks and the east of town.
Yes, Richard.
Yes, sir.
About 4 years ago, we had a lot of breaks in there. Are you expecting it to be able to service?
So, Councilman Cardoza, to answer your question, you're right. We did do some engineering research on that, and some Paul talked with Keller, Justin Walker at Keller. We kind of came up with an idea right when I first became Public Works Director, to look at that line again. What we think was going on with that line in the past was it was only one 10-inch line, and it was exceeding the maximum pressure of the rating of the pipe, which is about 120, and we were at about 141 PSI on it. So we're hoping with running that parallel with the 14-inch line, it'll decrease the pressure enough so we won't have any more problems with it. With that said, we did fire it up last week for a test run. We only ran it for about a half hour or so. We did have a couple bad valves, a couple bad air releases, but we did not have any breaks in the actual pipe. We just wanted to get it fired up, see exactly what we were looking at, get a snapshot of the pressure readings. The pressures were below 100 PSI, so that was a positive. The negative was is we did have to replace a couple air releases and had to replace one valve. So we're going to get those things fixed, and then we need to fire it up for a more substantial amount of time. As long as the pipe in the ground is good, which nobody really knows if the original problem was a defective pipe or material or just exceeding the maximum amount of pressure. Mathematically, it was exceeding the pressure, so we're hoping by running the two lines parallel that it decreased the pressure enough to where we don't have any major problems with that. It's about a $2 million asset. In today's market, so I think it's definitely worth our time to see if that is a good viable asset. And as you can see by the memo, it frees up a lot of capacity at 10 mile. Hope that answers your question.
And then also, that was the correspondence that I had sent on to council explaining how we report issues to DEQ whenever there is some kind of a. In this case, we had a couple of the air relief valves that burped by, and so our fix for fixing those and staying compliant with DEQ. So that was from that test was that email that I'd sent you for information.
I know in the past at 10 Mile we've had problems with the breakdown. We've had septic tank trucks there. Have we had any in the last couple of years on that 10 Mile?
No, I believe 2015 or so, there were some upgrades done that helped that. Since I've been Public Works Director, we haven't had anything out of normal. There's always daily normal maintenance we do on that stuff. We have not had anything out of normal, what I consider normal compared to any other lift station.
All these figures you're throwing in here, are you considering the new subdivision that Tim Eck is putting down the road? I think it was 80 acres.
The IRSA 40 acres.
40 acres with 5 homes per acre would be about 200 homes?
Yes, sir, we are.
And even though that's coming online, you still figure 300 to 400 EDUs will be made available over and above or to include those 200?
So what we did is we met with planning zoning staff. We looked at everything they knew that was coming, everything that we knew was coming, and we tried to calculate that all in over like a five-year period. So we did account for everything we knew that was on the radar. So yes, it does take an account for that, which is why the number right now is negative, is because we are taking that in consideration. But a lot of that will be built over a 5 to even 8 year period. So we did take that in consideration also, and that's why it allows us a little bit of time to do a couple of the other ideas on fixing them, capital improvement projects such as Prospector subdivision and some of the other ideas we have.
Thank you. Okay. Further questions for Bob?
Looks like a good plan.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so next on this one is, so there's a request for a reallocation of funds and contingency funds. So the money that, like we do every time, some of these funds that don't get spent out go back into contingency for bookkeeping purposes. So where did you have the numbers on that, Bob?
Page 2 of AC1. Got it. Okay. So you are, to confirm, you're requesting the reallocation of $750,000 from the 2017-18 CIP sewer fund. Is that right? To the Orchard Lift Station project?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else in the... Oh, wait. So actually, is it 418,275.50? Wait a second, I'm sorry. So you're asking for first reallocation of 750, right? And then also contingency funds from 17-18 and 18-19?
Yes.
So three?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't miss anything?
Nope.
Okay. Okay.
Real quick, Bob. Is it my understanding, just in reading this, and please correct me then, that we had budgeted the 1.2 and they had come with bids that were more than double that?
We had budgeted 1.2. That number was put together in the end of 2016. There was also another $240,200 that was budgeted at that time for engineering services that didn't get used, so that actually rolled back into contingency. So even though we're using that right now, it was originally budgeted, but yes, there's definitely $836,000 shortfall in what the original budgeted number was. I don't have any back knowledge of why they only budgeted the $1.2 million for it. I do know that construction costs are across the valley since 2016. It was in December of 2016 when this number was originally budgeted for the 2017-18 is when they put the number together. Construction costs are up considerably, anywhere from 30% to 40%, but that was the number that was submitted for the 2017-18 budget.
I was going to say almost every project recently has ended up going up in cost, and whatever we budgeted for or estimated, it's been precipitously more because of the shortage of construction availability, increasing cost for materials, and all that kind of stuff.
So just this might help a little. As we went through the construction, or excuse me, the engineer process of this, the actual, just about 2 months ago, we estimated that the actual construction cost of this would be $2.1 million. So just from the time of when Gordon had originally looked at this project, a year later, it had went up from 1.2 to about 2.1 was the engineer estimate. So,
well, there was a couple of things in there. We're not sure if Gordon had budgeted the entire higher amount there, so we don't know that that was actually the cost that he was projecting, but that based on what we have, that's the number we're able to pull up. So.
Yeah, and I think what the mayor's talking about is there's a screening process that we added to the Orchard Street lift station after the original budget. The reason we need that screening process is so that we can send the waste straight to the lagoons instead of tying it into 10 Mile. Because the way they had it designed was Orchard would pump to 10 Mile, screen at 10 Mile, and 10 Mile would pump to the lagoons, which doesn't help the problem at all. So we did have to re-engineer that and add a screening system, which was about $300,000 to send it straight south, which freed up all the some capacity at 10 Mile. So without doing that, okay, it wouldn't have done us any good.
So that does though help to explain that difference in why it was so much.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just stay up there.
It was a budgeted CIP project, so
it's not in the contingency. It's a separate line item being carried forward. The $750,000.
Yeah, Councilmember Cardozo, it's an individual budgeted line item for this fiscal year we're in right now. Yeah.
So that's not affecting our contingency of $1,624,000. That should have been $750,000.
Exactly.
So we are currently in talks with those folks, letting them know that what's going on, and Richard is also working on this, and we're working on a strategy to allow the developers to build that line under a reimbursement program of some sort, which I know Richard will be bringing that to you guys soon. We are working with the developers on that.
Sure.
Define better.
We will have two separate. We will keep the 10-year one for certain circumstances and then a different termed one for those projects that are in the capital improvement that are done at the discretion of a developer earlier than what we would have budgeted and built. So let's say we have it in our 18-19 budget and a developer comes in and says they want it in the 17 budget and they're willing to do it at their expense up front, and then they enter into the reimbursement pool, but it'll be different than what we have existing.
I think it's essentially, it might be 10 years, but it's going to be something that we end up working out on a case-by-case basis, or at least with this
Correct.
Specific project.
Currently, we don't have a separate mechanism. So it'll allow us to enter into a contract with a developer to complete that and reimburse at
Would
a different
it just
rate.
Be on that line going out to Scrabble, or is this in future lines going?
It will be, at this point, the thought is if we have a capital improvement plan budgeted and a developer doesn't want to wait till the term that we're going to construct that, and they're willing to put it in earlier, we will have a reimbursement program for that type of situation.
Okay, specifically for that. Okay. It's amazing how one lawyer has to talk to another for the layman.
Trust us, we're lawyers.
We will both be billing you for this conversation, by the way.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Bob.
All right, so let's just make sure we get the...
Is there any other questions first? If not, I'll go ahead and try to. So it's $750,000, I guess, just to recap. $750,000 would be reallocated from the current budgeted amount for the 2017-2018, or in the 2017-2018 CIP sewer fund that was intended to extend the New Orchard lift station to Strobel Road. Then we would also be authorizing the expenditure of $418,275.50 from the 2017-18 contingency fund, as well as $418,275.50 from the 2018-19 contingency fund, right?
Correct.
That covers everything you need?
Sure hope so.
All right. No, it got absorbed into contingency, so it's part of the.
That's going to be part of the 400.
Right. It already. Yeah. So we, I guess, stated a different way. We can think of it as 418,275.50 minus 240,200, if that makes us feel better. Yeah.
That was a footnote, I think.
Okay. So then I officially move that we authorize the reallocation of $750,000 budgeted in the 2017-2018 CIP sewer fund that were budgeted for extending the New Orchard lift station to Strobel Road, as well as the expenditure of $418,275.50 from the 2017-2018 contingency fund, and $418,275.50 from the 2018-2019 contingency fund, all of which would be reallocated to be spent on the Orchard Lift Station project.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. So the next item, then, since we have come up with the money for it, is to adopt a resolution to accept the bid for that project. This is a, so it's consideration to approve resolution number R32-2018, a resolution of the City Council of Cuna, Idaho, accepting and awarding the bid for the 2018 Orchard Regional Lift Station project to Granite Excavation in the amount of $2,546,351. Directing expenditure of funds from the sewer fund for said project and authorizing the mayor, city clerk, and city engineer to execute the contract documents with said bidder.
I move we approve resolution R32-2018.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R32-2018. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza? Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Next item, we have, so John will be leaving us, and so to fill that void, we have Bill Jackson, who's been with us for a while now, very capable man that's made life good for us since he came on board, and we appreciate him very much. He has offered to take that interim treasurer position until we are able to replace that position. So what we need just for this is to appoint Bill Jackson as the interim city treasurer.
I move we approve Bill Jackson is the interim city treasurer until such time as a permanent city treasurer is hired.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Bill.
Bill, I have to tell you that the city treasurer, John, used to take the council out every Friday.
Not on the public dime.
Just leave your credit card if you can't make it.
Okay, item E then, this is a request for an additional meeting from Troy. There was some issues with getting this on the agenda. This is actually one that we had tabled for a date certain, and it didn't get put in, put on the agenda, and so we're late with it. Troy is asking for the a special meeting for this to help with the applicant because they've been put off a couple of times now already. But the soonest that they could have this meeting would be June 7th in order to be able to comply with the publications that are required for this meeting. He said that this was not really a controversial type item, so the meeting shouldn't take long, but it is up to council if you would like to hold a special meeting for either Thursday, June 7th or Monday, June 11th, based on Troy's request, and there is a memo there that puts in his words.
A lunch. Yeah, it's at noon, yeah.
A noon meeting.
Well, I'll just say for me, I can make the noon meeting, it looks like, but I am leaving for vacation later that day and will not return until the 15th. So if my attendance is desired, I think it would need to just be at the June 19th council meeting, but my attendance is not required for a quorum necessarily, so if you guys decide you want to have it on a different day, that's fine too.
I'm good with either. It's up to you two.
Yeah. Are we going to carpool to Garden City from here?
Yes, we can.
That's certainly up to you. Will we have a quorum?
Let me ask.
It's okay to say no.
I'm thinking way too hard about this. Yeah, we can make it work. We'll have a quorum. We'll be there.
We will have a quorum.
On the 7th at 11 o'clock for a council meeting to address this issue?
The only thing I'm concerned about is it's a public hearing, and so it always makes me a little bit uncomfortable putting something in the middle of a work day. I know Troy said it's not going to be controversial, but I don't want to deprive anybody of their opportunity to speak or require them to take time off of work in order to do so. So that's just my two cents. But
well, and so far it hasn't been, but that doesn't mean it won't become that way later. So you're absolutely right, and I think we'd also be, if it did turn into something else, perhaps a half an hour might not be sufficient to get the meeting across and then make it to Ada County Commissioner meeting in Garden City in that amount of time. Was the joint meeting at noon?
I'm sorry, what?
Thursday, June 7th at 11 o'clock. Is that what I'm gathering?
No.
No.
It would have to be in the evening, and there'll be council member or Council President Boobin Vonderhaar will not be available to be a quorum at an evening meeting until after the 15th, which would then go to the regular meeting on the 19th.
Next scheduled meeting. I'm okay making any evening meeting, so we can make it a quorum on the 7th if we need to.
In the evening?
7th in the evening.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't take that back.
You can always hit him with your cane. That works?
Do you need a motion then for a special meeting on the 7th at 6 o'clock?
Don't really need a motion. It'll just be posted as that there will be a meeting. And so everyone can make it to ACHD at noon on the 7th?
I did want to ask one question.
Yes.
On the special meeting on the 7th, are there any other additional agenda items that will be allowed, or is it to be restricted to just the one item?
I think just the one item, unless somebody else is.
If there's anything urgent that needs to happen that we have enough notice of, but my preference is not to start the process of, like, allowing to have a bunch of extra meetings if they're not absolutely necessary.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
This gives you enough time to publish
it. So you asked the question about lunch. I hadn't RSVP'd to you until just now, but so is it everybody then? Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Are you going to Ada County? Let me ask.
Ada County Highway District.
Yes, I will get back to you, Chris. No, as of right now, yes.
Okay.
If that changes, I will let you know within a day.
Okay. Councilmember McPherson, you'll be in attendance? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and so the purpose of the meeting is basically just that they're going to have their full board there, and was hoping to meet with our council so that we can talk over things. We haven't had a joint meeting for quite a while, so... it would be best and respectful for us all to be there if possible, so I appreciate that. Very
and
good.
Carpool information will be forthcoming.
Yeah.
Right. And we will publish that the council will be in quorum at a meeting. So.
I'll just drive my pickup up Vine Street. You can bail over the side on the way out of town. Yeah, so we're just down to mayor and council announcements. Again, I just want to thank John for, I don't know, Richard can attest to the way things were before John got here and the things that he's done to pull this city up out of a hole and bring us into a really good position. I'm always proud when I get to talk to people, and like Robert McQuaid, when we were talking earlier in the office, you know, one of the things I told him was that the city's debt-free. We don't have bonds out there. We don't have things hanging over our head. And John and his leadership and abilities were are a great part of the reason that we have come to that. Along with the teamwork of everyone else, but I don't know how to express the gratitude from the city for what you've done for us. And had I found out sooner, I'd have got a giant trophy for you or something, but I didn't have time to get one of those yet, so I don't know what that is.
Sports Center.
Sports Center?
So
yes,
that's definitely not you.
You will be sorely missed. Yeah. Yeah. Can't thank you enough for all of your hard work for the city. Yeah.
Does anybody else have anything they want to mention? We did have someone who was talking about they were unhappy with our art piece that, I don't mean to make it sound that way, like that was wrong, but that it was not accessible to someone in a wheelchair. I just want everybody to know that there's a ramp system that we intend to put in there. In fact, I think they're probably getting on that fairly quickly, that hadn't been installed yet because of the timeline that we had to do to get that project finished and completed so that we could have the announcement and pictures and grand opening for it from the people that supplied the funding for it. So it will be accessible to handicapped people here soon. So we certainly want to make everything that we do accessible to all the children. So did anybody else have anything else? What's all the grinning about? They were off the other day. Are they doing it again?
They were on today, during the day.
Well, that was on the cloudy. Disrupt your office.
Lights are actually on a timer system with a photocell backup. So we had the installers come out for the third or fourth time 2 weeks ago. We actually went out and met them ourselves and on site to see if we can figure out what's going on and to possibly be able to even program it ourselves. They weren't able to fix it on the timer system, so we're actually having the manufacturer come out, which is not in state. So what we did is we bypassed the clock, put it on the photo cell so that they would be off. So that's probably what happened most likely when that thunderstorm rolled through. It got dark enough to kick them back on. Because I spent most of the day, or the first part of the day out there doing walk-arounds for phase two, and they were off at that time. But I'm sure the storm just tripped them.
As a taxpayer, I want a rebate.
And since those are LED lights, I think that probably should be about one millionth of a penny. Mm-hmm. So we're going to figure out how to cut that for you.
My account,
all right.
Okay.
So the only other thing we need then is an executive session, and we'll just have John join us for the first couple of minutes.
Okay. And then afterwards, we still have one more agenda item, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just so
correct.
People don't leave if
correct.
They
yeah,
still
there's
want.
One more joint yeah. Agenda item.
Okay. I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74206B for the purpose of discussing personnel matters. Is there a second?
We have a motion and a second. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you.